when you were young and your heart was an open book. You used to say, live and let live.
You know you did, you know you did, you know you did.
But if this ever-changing world in which we live in makes you live and let die.
Roger Moore, dead at the age of 89. This was his first Bond film, and some say his best.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I want to. There were a number of them. It's very different. The Bond series took a little bit of a different turn when they went with Roger Moore, and joining us right now is no greater a Bond expert on the planet Earth than Doug Rodinius.
Stop.
No, it is true. Doug Rodinius, who is the founder of the Ian Fleming Foundation and a guy who has one of the great private collections, had one of the great private collections of James Bond memorabilia, and it was right here in Chicago, which is one of the most amazing things. You know, you think about Bond, it would be in London or it would be in, you know, this, you know, Hong Kong or something, but it's right here. It was right here. It was in Kankakee, of all places.
Isn't that incredible?
Yep, it sure was. Those were the days.
Yep. So let's talk about. I'm sure you're getting a lot of calls about Roger Moore today.
I have been. Yeah, and it's ironic because we're just coming off the tragedy in Manchester. I mean, how much can we take? And then you wake up in the news, and it's like, no, this can't be happening. It's tragic on top of tragedy. It's very sad. I won't ever watch a Bond movie and think of it the same way. But he was a great guy. He really, really was. And he was so funny. If you didn't laugh when he walked into the room, there was something wrong. I mean, he was just a master of jokes, and he loved to entertain people. But very sad. That's true.
I did have the opportunity to interview him by phone once. And it was like, I'm like, oh, my God, I can't believe this.
Uh-huh.
I can't. And then he sent me a gift afterwards.
He did. He sent me
an autographed book and then a thing of chocolate with my name in it. Uh-huh. He was one of those guys. He was an old Hollywood star, right? I mean, that
sure was
her, or international star, you should say, because I mean, he transcended both London and Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he really did. I mean, it was a no brainer for him to play that character. Obviously, he had been in The Persuaders. He had been in The Saint. He wasn't actually really tall. I was about to say he was tall, dark, and handsome. He wasn't really all that tall. I've been with him on a number of occasions, and he's 6 feet tall, but on the screen he had a omnipresence of his stature. He just seemed to be the 6'6" kind of guy that could rule everything. But, he definitely loved the role, and stepping into that role after Sean and George, of course. Sean and him were good friends.
Yeah, I want to ask about that, because Sean was just interviewed, and they and it was amazing to hear Sean speak of him as saying, by Hollywood standards, we had an unusually long relationship, filled with jokes, laughter. I'm going to miss him. I don't know why that sort of surprised me that they were that close, but they were.
They were very close. Yeah, they were very close, even though Connery hailed from Scotland and Roger from London, but Michael Caine rounded out that threesome. Those three fellows spent a lot of time together.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and Michael Caine obviously worked with Sean Connery in a number of films, too, and it was it really is a very, very it's a unique fraternity of those guys, especially.
Yeah. Right.
People who, you know, come out of that world. And you know, one of the things that that amazed me about Roger Moore, and one of the reasons I think he was the longest lasting of the Bonds, was he never complained about the role. Every other actor complained about the role. Every single one.
That's right.
And I don't know why.
Himself too seriously. I mean, if he wasn't having fun, and if the audience wasn't having fun, then that's when he wouldn't do it. But even with the smash-up picture Cannonball Run, I mean, it's a ridiculously slapstick film, but he was playing a character who thought he was Roger Moore. I mean, how hilarious and how goofy can you get?
That's true. That's true. What do you think is his best film in the Bond series?
Well, in the Bond series, I had this conversation with John Glenn a few years ago. My favorite Roger Moore Bond film is For Your Eyes Only. And the reason I like that film is it's as closest of the seven that he did that's serious. You know, it didn't rely on a tremendous amount of trickery and gadgetry. It was just a beautifully shot film. And it was one of Roger's favorites, and it was John Glenn's favorites of the five that he did with Roger. But
right. He was a director, not the astronaut, the director.
That's correct. Right. Yeah, that's correct. But, you know, Rose, well, Richard Kiel and I were very close friends, and we lost Richard just a couple of years ago. And they had a blast when they did The Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker together. They really did. I mean,
I think that was an interesting thing because Roger Moore endured a lot of criticism for taking the Bond franchise and making it more slapstick because it was getting what had happened there was that the Pink Panther series had started to do great box office.
And
they were trying to figure out a way to make the Bond films a little bit more slapsticky like the Pink Panther series was and make, you know, sort of fold them into this, you know, just it's sort of an international romp and funny and, you know, just a little bit of danger. And then maybe the danger would be worse, but you still want, they wanted a lot of comedy with it. And Roger Moore, who was, you know, a really facile actor, could have done, you know, anything that he needed to do, was, you know, had a very light touch and was able to do it. But when you start with Live and Let Die, where he was, you know, the dark Bond, which is what they wanted to be, and then you take him all the way to For Your Eyes Only, where he had to go back to being dark, because that was the movie where they decided, hey, you know what we're doing here? We're stopping all of this because the whole slapstick era had ended, and this was now the late 70s into the early 1980s. They really wanted to tighten up to take him back to being 007.
Yeah, that's right. And by the time that the next picture rolled around with Grace Jones, it was very clear not only to Roger, because there was a bit of back and forth whether he was going to come back and do A View to a Kill. He did, but he realized that his days had come and went. I mean, he was of a certain age. The actresses were getting younger. The action was getting harder. And I think he left at the right time. Some folks seem to think that he probably should have left after For Your Eyes Only. But, you know, A View to a Kill was in the middle of the 80s. I mean, it was Big Hair and Duran Duran. So.
It was Duran
I remember
Duran.
Those times well, very, very well, as being a teenager at that time. But it's interesting, there are some conflicting reports that maybe you could set straight for us. There are so many interviews with him where he was so humble and just talked about, you know, gosh, I'm the luckiest guy around, and you know, look at where I came from, and I really am so appreciative. And if he asked to pick out the best Bonds, he named three others before himself. He said, I might be in the top five or something. And then there were some reports that he became rather difficult toward the end. And I just wonder if you knew what the truth was there.
No, he didn't become difficult. Cubby Broccoli loved him like a family member. They were very, very close. And 94-year-old gentleman that I'm helping him write his memoirs at the moment, Jerry Giroux, was the publicist on all the Bond pictures. And Jerry says that he was, they were very close up until the end, even after Cubby died and Roger stayed very close to Barbara Broccoli and Michael Wilson. But he was humble. I mean, obviously, folks that are lucky enough to fall into making a Bond movie, to become part of the Bond family, they're treated with the best of everything. I mean, they travel in luxury, they stay in luxury, they eat the greatest food, they never want for anything, they make fair salaries, and it's a wonderful world to be a part of. And Roger loved the fact that at his age, after he had done so many years of television, to have fallen into that and really racked in some money. Yeah. And international superstardom. He literally became a superstar, but he wasn't a superstar in the same genre as a Cary Grant or a Humphrey Bogart or a Paul Newman. But he was even bigger than those guys in a sense.
Yeah, in a big way. I mean, there's no question that you know, in terms of box office success and pure recognizability and people wanting to get their, you know, to be around them and to get their picture taken with them. And you know, my very short and telephonic experience with him was a very, very pleasant one. I mean, he's a very he was a great gentleman about all of it, and when he didn't need to do that sort of thing. And
right.
He has an amazing, and he does have a really great autobiography out that people, if they want to read, where he kind of takes you through that, and he does it in a, and there's not a lot of dark. It's, if you want a happy Hollywood story and a happy kind of a, but with, you know, with great stories about things that kind of go a little wrong, it's, he does a great thing, and he had a lot of beautiful women around him too. That's, you know what, it was all good for Roger Moore.
He lived a great life.
It really was.
All right. Yep.
All right, Doug. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time, sir.
Doug
Rudinius. Yep. All right. Let us, the foremost Bond expert, I think, on the planet Earth, by the way.
Cool, so for him to check in with us.
Need something to know about Bond. He's the guy. All right. Violetta Powder Medics at the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots.